From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
The big change that I would say every FD brings to a business is we get them to do things faster. So typically, the businesses we work with, they're growing or they're looking to grow, and an FD helps them grow faster.
I'm Conor Carney, and that's the voice of Bart Kane, Regional Director of the FD Centre, a provider of part-time CFOs and financial directors with a passion for growing businesses. Bart is a highly experienced CFO with a strong understanding of how to manage a growing business to ensure success. In this conversation, Bart talks about the key things we must think about when scaling a business, how exponential growth can actually kill an organization, and why the financial director is the entrepreneur's secret weapon. Bart started out by telling me what the FD Centre is and the services they provide.
The FD Centre, it's a team of qualified accountants, each with a minimum of 7 years experience working as CFO or equivalent of large organisations. So instead of working full-time with one business as CFO, we now work as CFO on a part-time to five, maybe six businesses. So it's very rewarding for a client. They get 100% of the benefit of having an FD, but it's just a fraction of the cost because we work part-time with each client.
And you know, a financial director, can you talk me through the role and why it's actually possible to do it on a part-time basis rather than having a full-time in-house financial director in the business?
So finance director, to me, is the most important person in the company simply because they're going to be the guardian of the finances. Every company needs a full-time finance director at some stage. And typically that's when they're over 50 million. Euro turnover. And sometimes even then, a part-time FD is appropriate. Mm. So when I say that every business needs one, you still need that experience. If somebody has managed a company in the finance, so to manage to take full responsibility for all the finances of operating the company, you still need that experience in a smaller business with 1, 2, 3 million euro turnover, but you don't need a full-time FD coming in for that. So that's why the FD Centre supply that we bring in those part-time FDs, and they work most likely on a one day per week, perhaps just two or three days per month with the client, making sure that we manage their finances and get them strategically focused and make sure they're looking forward, looking to where they want to bring their business to.
And looking forward, what is that in a financial context, and what role does the financial director play in that? And the reason I'm asking is because I think some businesses, especially smaller ones, they don't understand the importance of the finance function in general until they kind of hit a roadblock. And actually, sometimes I find that they don't often know that it's a finance roadblock that they've hit, but oftentimes it is. So I'm just interested to hear about, you know, what role the finance director plays in the strategic area of the business.
So we split the role of a finance director into two areas. There's operational and the strategic. Operational is day-to-day reporting, making sure you've got your accounts in order, you've got the accounting systems in order, the reporting systems, and your forecasts are in order. Strategic, and that's where an FD will make sure the system is in place, work with the likes of JetBooks, make sure if they don't have a bookkeeper, if they don't have a good function, we'll bring it in, we'll outsource it, and we'll say bring it in like that. Make sure that's in order. That's where we move to the strategic side. And strategic side is really working with the owners and say, ultimately, what's their plan? You know, what are they thinking of 3 to 5 years time? If they're looking at, maybe they're looking at exit, maybe they're looking at buying another business. What are they doing about that now? So on the strategic side, that's where an FD really excels. That's where they really add value. They're making sure the owners are looking at that, looking at the plan. What is their plan and what are they doing about it now? So we keep them on track on that. And we help them, like I say, we help them not just look ahead, but look around the corners and see what's there ahead of them and make sure that they are keeping to that plan or adapting as needs be.
How much change would the FTE Centre or someone, you know, an FTE from the FTE Centre make to an organisation? Maybe in terms of the operations or even the business model, would the FD Centre ever really get involved with that? You know, if it was in terms of maybe improving the cash conversion cycle of a business or something like that, do you go that far?
So in terms of the changes that we will bring, the big change that I would say every FD brings to a business is we get them to do things faster. So typically, the businesses we work with, they're growing or they're looking to grow, and an FD helps them grow faster. Mm-hmm. So do we bring in change in the systems there? Absolutely. You know, if their reporting is in order, that's fine. That's great. We leave well enough alone. And if it's not in order, we come in and make sure it is. Will we go in and implement processes then to get cash collection in? Typically, cash is what runs the business, whether it's coming from customers, whether it's coming from banks, whether it's coming from investors. Absolutely. That's where we excel. So, yeah, we do bring in implement processes to get things happening and typically happening faster. The owners are able to do things. They're able to bring in investment very often. They're able to bring in debt finance from banks if they need be. And they're able to bring in customer money. They're pretty good at that always, all of those things. But bringing in an FD typically helps those things happen faster, more orderly manner, and takes the stress out of the business.
How did you get involved with the FD Centre?
I need to warn you, the final part of this answer is a bit sad, but I do have incredibly good memories starting out as a part-time FD. After my last full-time role as a CFO in business, I went back to Kaizen Recruitment, researching what roles were suitable for me in the market. Mm. And I had incredible experience. I'll go through that later anyway. But I really enjoyed working with business owners talking to go to business. Mm. And I just wanted to see my own options. So instead of looking for a role for me in the market, Kaizen asked me if I would work with them on a part-time basis. They'd grown the business from 4 million to 10 million in a single year. That success, and it was real success, but it brought its own problems. Mm. So as CFO with Kaizen, I was able to get them through the barriers. And I'm proud to say that the business has now grown by over 100% since that. Mm. So it was fantastic, but it was part-time. And that's where it was. So working with Kaizen on a part-time basis left me wondering about what options, what do we do with the rest of my time? Yeah. And I came across an article in Sunday Business Post about part-time CFOs and the FD Centre in Ireland. The article was an interview with David Hyland. He was country leader for the FD Centre in Ireland. I contacted David straight off that article. Once we met up, I was just totally sold on the concept. I kept working on Kaizen. That was my part-time role. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, then worked with David, going through, see what other potential clients there might be as need a part-time CFO. I would say it wasn't unusual for us to be talking 6-7 times a day. Just he was passionate about the business and about what we could do with it. And absolutely, I so much enjoyed working with him. Mm. But so the sad part is David passed away a year later, young man, and it was cancer. And it was just very little warning and just very, very tragic. But he was the reason. I always think, you know, my start with the FD Centre, my introduction to it was David, and absolutely fabulous memories of it.
And how had David found the FD Centre originally?
So he was an accountant, more practice background. Mm. And he developed a relationship then with the FD Centre in the UK and some of the founders in the UK, and just liked the idea. Dave was based in Cork, and he was working from Cork. He had some clients in Dublin at the time. And that was it. He bought into it and he sold it on to me.
It's a franchise model, isn't it? That's the model that
it's really a franchise model, yeah.
Yeah. So each individual FD is kind of a franchisee of the larger business.
Each one, I'd like to think we're self-managed teams, yeah. Mm. It's each one has got their own client portfolio. So each FD has got 5, maybe maximum 6 clients. Mm. And they will work with that. Like they are the FD for those clients.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know, they are self-employed in that capacity, but working then within the structure of the FD Centre, where we've to support 250 FDs in the UK And then there's another 150 outside of that in 15 other countries.
And you mentioned earlier about the recruitment company that had grown, you know, that had more than doubled in the space of a year. That's actually something I come across quite a bit in terms of companies have kind of been victims of their own success because they've grown so quickly or they've been, you know, they've been such a success almost out the gate that the systems, especially in the finance function, if there's no kind of accountant on the team already, kind of get left behind a bit. Is that something you see a bit in these successful businesses?
It can easily happen. Whether that in Kaizen recruitment, you know, I would talk about things that are in public forum. You can mm-hmm. see their filed accounts. You know, they had massive growth in there, and it's evident if you look at any set of financials where you have that growth. You know, a debtor's book goes from being 1 million to 2 million. You know, mm-hmm. you double your turnover. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, right? Well, how do you do that? Your debtor book in. So everything comes back to your finance function. If you're not recording that, if you can't anticipate that with that growth in there, well, you know, you're going to have, you know, a larger debtor book. If you have a larger debtor book, that creates a funding requirement within the business. How are you going to address that? And each of those, you know, so you can address it, absolutely try to fund it within the business. And you say, well, with profits, you know, but you're getting very quickly into an overtrading situation. And banks won't like it. Like, it might look like profitable growth, but if they're not certain about the quality of debt. So all of those. So if you don't build that growth, high growth business and really strong financial reporting structures, you're building on it. It's like a house of cards and comes down very quickly. And that is probably the value I would have said with Kaizen or any client I would say that we've ever gone to, is that the first thing we do is go in and look at the systems, look at the controls and look at the systems, make sure they're fit for purpose. And if they're not, just basically get them in quickly. And we love outsourcing, by the way, and that's why I'm talking to you as well. Like, as you know, you're working with some of our clients already, and we do that. And that, obviously, we like you, but JetBooks, it does. You add value to the clients, and where you're adding value, that's where we see it. And we get rewarded for that because our clients see that we can have these great partnerships where we can add value. So as a result, it's very complementary where you can add value to our client base, and it's mutual. So that's really why, yeah, definitely.
That part's just so important, isn't it? Like, knowing where you're going and seeing where the problems are going to arise as you're growing. And I always kind of think about the finance function. You know, every decision in the business, it all comes back to the finance function. You know, every decision in the business is a financial decision. Ultimately, you know, are we going to, it's the opportunity cost of spending or investing in certain things. Is it supporting the managing director or the owner of the business with those decisions? Once the finance function is in place and you have proper reporting structures, you know what's happening in the business on a day-to-day basis, then is it about decision-making based on the reports and the financial position?
It is about making sure the data is there, making sure that the owners are fully armed with that information. Mm-hmm. I always see when a business is going, when the accounts is performing best and the finance functions are working at its best, people don't realize it's there. They just expect a weekly report and say, well, I always get that part. And yeah, and I do meet companies like that, that they come back in, well, I get my weekly report. Actually, I always get my management accounts. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do that. So what are you saying? Is there a problem? I said, no, that's an absolute essential that you have that. Mm-hmm. And now once you have that data, now you can run the business. Now you can look forward. So it's accounting, the function, it's retrospective. It's looking back at what happened last week, last month, last year. And where businesses are overly focused and trying to fix the problems last week and they didn't get their sales report, they didn't get their management accounts, or they're waiting on last year's accounts, which is sometimes an issue with places. It's just indicative of the systems that are failing and are dragging the owners behind. Whereas we said, listen, get those systems up to date and get the data in front of you. You can make those decisions about the future and we get them forward facing and looking out to what they want to do next instead of what happened last week or last month, because that's finished with. And the best solution for that is always putting in really good systems and making sure that they're reporting well.
And more technically, you know, looking into the future and helping companies grow, what does that involve on a technical accounting point of view? Is it budgeting? Is it financial modeling based on different scenarios? You know, what does that look like?
Helping a company grow, typically, very often the business owners that we work with are, they know what they want to do.
Mm.
And we will convert that into some kind of modeling. Very often it can be a simple financial model and showing them this is it. You know, if they're looking at buying a business, if they're just looking at going out to the market at a low margin in order to capture market share, some of those, we will reflect that. And that is modeling. Yeah, definitely. The FD will come back in and present that a good set of financials to show this is the impact of what you're looking at doing. Yes, absolutely, it'll grow by, you know, 100% or 200%, but as a result, there's going to be a cost to that. It could be a funding cost that you're basically, you're extending a debtor book, or it could be a cost that you're actually working at a lower cost, lower margin, and that itself. So either many of those scenarios will create a funding requirement that you're going to identify at a very early stage because DFD is on board. And they've identified and they're saying, yeah, that's it. It's a really good plan, but you're going to have a funding requirement. Now let's address that funding requirement. So now they've actually built a bridge and you can walk across it as a business instead of getting to a place and realize, oh, there's a gap here with funding and it stops the business growing.
How often would the owner or the managing director, say, of a business be misguided or wrong going into, let's say, an acquisition or something like that? Is it part of your job as a financial director to guide those decisions? You know, actually, I don't think that's the best course of action because of X, Y, and Z. You know, is that part of it as well?
Oh, it's to put the data in front of them. Really, it's all about data. And we have to make sure that any decisions they're making are really well informed.
Mm.
So it really, and the figures speak for themselves. If you make sure you get the data presented in the right order, and if they're looking at acquiring a business, that they can go in and we've done the due diligence on it, or we've engaged with the people who can do the due diligence.
Mm.
Absolutely. So typically, you will always come to the right answer at that once you've done the work. And our role is making sure that the owners are fully informed on that, and they will always make the right decision then.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your role in the FD Centre now, because I know that you're not working as a financial director currently for any companies, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but how has your role in the FD Centre changed since buying over the master franchise for Ireland?
We work actually as part of the franchise within the UK, but contentious politically, but it works incredibly well, I have to say. So there's two more regional directors in Ireland, Milo Malloy and Brian Stack, and then myself, so that's all of Ireland covered. And then we work with just 22 regional directors in the UK. And we actually work as part of a team. But for the most part, my role is sourcing really good CFOs that can come join our team and then matching them up with great clients. That's really it. There's a bit of a sill of lack in there that it is matching because the FDs are incredible. They are really incredible. They impress me more than I impress myself, and that's not a small thing.
But Bart, how do you assess an FD? I know you said earlier, you know, there's 7 years experience as a financial director, as a CFO, but you know, what are the kind of the bare bones of what it comes down to when you're hiring someone, or when you're trying to get someone on board to the FD Centre? What are the kind of attributes of a good financial director?
So their experience must stand up. They must have been in the larger organization as CFO or FD for, that was 7 years. In many cases, actually much longer than that, they have been there. Mm. So that's a given in there. And the key part that I look at then is, are they people, would I like to work with them? Mm. You know, are they somebody that I would like to introduce for our client? Mm. And that's a really, really important part of it, because there's no point in bringing in somebody really tremendously experienced that just doesn't have the wherewithal to be able to work with a client, and because in that case they go to a client and they'll do a project. You know, if they're looking to raise money, they'll raise money, and then that project will be finished. Mm-hmm. Whereas we work with our clients for the long, long term. And in an average, you know, it could be 3 years plus that we would work with our clients, and the clients we have from the start with the FD Centre were really just over 4 years now in Ireland. So, and we've kept a good number of clients since then. We're really with them for the longer term.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. How did you start your career? Did you do anything financial when you were in college? And then what did you do before the FD Centre?
Oh, wow. There's a long answer in that. So I trained, qualified as an accountant with Bassett Charlton, as it was at the time, Crow as it is now.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, we've good relations with them now. Is actually just speaking to Nisha Cosgrove, he's the managing partner there. Just this morning before this, I was about a client that we're working on together.
Yeah.
But following that, they were actually a large hotel auditor, in the country. I think they still are. Large hotel auditor. And I built up a great great understanding of hotels. And so I went into hotels as a startup financial controller. I worked to get systems in place when the hotel was built originally. So the Fitzwilliam Hotel was owned by the Fitzwilliam Hotel Group. Owned the Royal Dublin on O'Connell Street at that time, as it was then, and the Metropole Hotel in Cork. So after getting the Fitzwilliam Hotel up and running, I had to go along and replicate same systems in each of the other hotels. So really exciting, fantastic time, absolutely loved it. And as I was going through all that, and that was over a space of a year and a half, I'd say, did an incredible amount of stuff there and loved it. But a friend of mine was setting up an MBO of a telecoms company down in Kerry, and he had offices in London and California, and he asked me to come join him and manage the finances of it. So I found a Fitzwilliam, very hard to go, but the lure of a telecoms company and this international feel about it, huge ambitions, drew me to Kerry. And the one objective was one of the investor directors said to me at the time, I was saying, like, what do you want out of it? Like, they knew me very well. And what were they looking at? This? Oh, we just want an exit, 18 months, and I can leave Kerry then. We actually sold that in seven, eight months later it was. We sold it to a company that recently floated on the NASDAQ. And I went on to work with that company then down in Kerry as finance director, EMEA, for the next 4 years. After that was back in the early 2000s, and telecoms companies at that time, it was global downturn. We started letting go of these incredible engineers. We were paying, oh my God, vast amounts of money to employ these only a couple of years earlier.
Yeah.
And we are now letting them go. And we saw this as an opportunity. And myself and two of the original founders of the company I went down to in Kerry, we started up a company called AltoBridge. And we brought back the shareholders who had exited earlier, and we brought them all back together and under AltoBridge, a really exciting venture, and got everybody involved in some part of the ownership, either options if they hadn't invested, and all of these, we knew them incredibly well, grew to 150 people, 4 jurisdictions all around the world.
Was that a telecoms company?
It was a telecoms company, yeah. So our claim to fame was we invented the world's first mobile phone solution that allowed mobile phones to be used on aircraft. Before its time, technology before its time. Yeah.
And is that company still around? What happened there?
Yeah, so we got it to 150 people, 4 jurisdictions, but it was early stage revenue company. And so it took investment then to keep the business going. And we brought in some high profile guys. Tony Ryan, God rest him, invested directly in there. Donald Slattery, through Claret Capital, invested. And we went on then to bring in investment from the World Bank and Intel Capital. They're the highest profile investors. From that, developed right through. So I would say we changed when we took in those very large global investors, mm-hmm. that we went out and started to address their interests rather than looking at our clients and looking at why did they invest in us. So from my own part, I left that. I felt I'd done everything at the time. We brought in those high investors. I went out and started working with other companies down in Kerry at that time. But Intel Capital and the World Bank, both of those, each of them had different interests. And I would have said we're probably just too small for them. They put in over 20 million at that stage, but they changed their focus. And as a result, the company's entirely dependent on their funding. So they pulled out of that in probably 2014, 2015.
Is that a big thing in companies that have a lot of external investors? I'm assuming they need at least some sort of financial person raising money for them on a regular basis, you know, especially if they're kind of early stage revenue. You know, do you see that in your work with the FD Center or, you know, throughout your kind of experience and your career, that the kind of funding can maybe be a distraction to the core business?
Funding is definitely a distraction to the core business, but very often the core business won't survive without that funding. So an FD can definitely can fix that gap, in that for an investor to come into a business, they want to see that the structures are in place, that they want to see that it's been very well managed from a financial perspective in particular. So they get great encouragement and get great confidence from seeing the FD on board. And from the company side, they will feel much more confident receiving the investment, knowing that, yeah, well, we know what's going to happen if things don't go right. These are the scenarios, and that the FD will have make sure that the company is prepared for as many different scenarios as can happen in with regard to, so like all things going well, that's great, you know, that as a company grows. But typically that's not the way, and the company tends to change direction slightly. But you have to anticipate many of these changes, as many as possible at the outset, so that in the ideal world, you can come back and say, well, that doesn't overly negatively impact the plan at the start. So the investor can still be happy, even though the company has changed. The investor can still be happy, and then the company can still be happy. And that's all to do with having good systems and having a good FD in place, making sure there's good communications between the investors and the company.
Do you find it all, and this is it's a little bit of a tangent, but, you know, some of your clients over the years or some of the companies you've worked with, the kind of, if it's an entrepreneur, do you find that they can be a bit trigger happy with ideas, you know, wanting to do various things? Do you have to play the bad guy in some situations and just put the foot down to say no?
With some, it depends on the individual, but definitely yes, yeah. There are times that you just say, "Wait a minute, we got to stop right there. We've got too many pokers in that fire." It's definitely, and it is a matter of making sure that they're focused on the right ones. Yeah, entrepreneurs by their nature can get distracted by the next best idea and say, "Well, hold on a minute, we need to close off and this is where we are now." And definitely it can be a matter of saying no at the right time.
Do you find, you know, that you're learning the whole time? I mean, I suppose at the start of your career in the hotel industry and then moving into telecoms, and then I suppose moving into what you might call business services now, you know, throughout that and throughout those changes, how are you kind of keeping on top and learning new things? Do you read a lot? Do you go to other resources, or do you sometimes defer to other people for some of these learnings?
Typically, I will learn an incredible amount from the clients, the people we work with. Absolutely extraordinary. I go into new industries and it's just extraordinary that the things, the thinking that can be in there. There's one company I work with. I would say they sell car parts, and I'd say there's nothing more ordinary than that. But these people can make it. They've made it into such an incredible thing that they can look at how many people are looking at a sale of a particular part at a particular time. Did they have it in stock and can have it? I say, oh my God, you know, I learn every time. Every time I meet these people, I learn something new. So I I would say my greatest learning source is actually back with clients. I keep up to date with markets and what's happening. I would say more through the old traditional Sunday papers and the Irish Times a lot. More digital, the currency, and that is typically the finger on the pulse. You always know what's going on. And yeah, largely, I would say if I keep my learnings up, most likely is from the clients we're working with. But bearing in mind, I do meet quite a number of clients now in my role as RD, and I do meet a lot of business leaders in that.
And given your change in role, you know, from a financial director within companies to kind of a regional director for the FD center, and this kind of matchmaking role that you have now, have you discovered that you've more strengths versus maybe some of the other things that an accountant might be good at in general?
Well, it's definitely much more a people thing for me. I need to, it's really finding the right people. Whereas from an accountant side, the raw accountant, the traditional accountant, you know, you can get very much engrossed in figures and data. But in my role now, definitely it is with people. I have come across some businesses that's just not somebody I really would feel comfortable with introducing them to an FD. And you know, I've basically not gone back to them. I just didn't feel comfortable with it, that I couldn't see the people fit there. So my people skills and, you know, these are definitely, I would say, and I hopefully continue to develop those. But it's working with people, working very, very much part of the team, making sure that the FDs can feel they're part of the team, and making sure the clients feel embraced and that they can see that we are getting them the right FD at the right time and getting them to do the right thing.
Have you found over time that you've had weaknesses and that you've tried to, and how have you kind of stayed away from those areas? And the reason I ask is because I think, you know, a lot of business people, they become successful because they tend to be focusing on their strengths. Maybe they're getting their weaknesses to a certain level, but they sometimes can find a way around that either by putting people in those positions. Have you found that over the course of your career?
Where I might have weaknesses, well, one never likes to confess to weaknesses.
Which is, it makes it a difficult question, all right.
What do you say? Like, too honest to do so. I would say probably I'm too trusting in there. You know, so if I meet an entrepreneur, very often I'm trying to say, wow, I loved their idea. I loved their vision. I loved that. But what I've learned from it, from it, and largely where I need, if I'm going working with one client, you know, that'd be one thing. But now I find that I'm working with a number of clients, a number of FDs. I need to say, I can't go into this great trusting relationship at the very start. So I will be very ruthless, whereas I believe in their plan. I really see it. I like their vision, absolutely like it. But I say, I'm very ruthless on the other side. I said, but you have to really pay as we go here. Like, I understand that the objective here is, it's just on the cusp of success. Tremendous success is just coming down. You're just going to go, you know, public, or you're just going to raise this huge investment. But you must make sure that you don't use the FD center or your FD as a funding source for you in the meantime, because it's very important that you keep it. So it's somebody, it's like that. It's like being rather ruthless in it, which I would have said would not be my normal way at all. It's,
not my norm. But I suppose you have to develop that, you know, when you find yourself in these situations.
You really, really have to, yeah. Like, the objective is to get the right FD with the right client and get them working. And if you bring in funding in there, that the FD needs to provide funding to it, it complicates it. And you're not going to achieve the goal that we're actually trying to get the FD with the right FD with the right client. It has been ruthless. And honestly, it really just works very, very well, I would say, because it means that there's a very clear focus on what the client is looking to achieve with the FD. And we do achieve it.
Can you remember maybe from the start of your career, you know, making any blunders, shall we say, at any stage? And, you know, what you know, have you learned anything from that? And have you taken anything forward with you throughout your career, having made that mistake?
There was no known blunders, I would say, at the time. But looking back, you know, were there things that I could have done better? Definitely. I would look back and I'd say where there was, I wouldn't say it was a blunder, more of a failure in terms of, say, like AltaBridge, we built up a fantastic successful model. I would have said we took our eye off the ball there because we built it up, 150 people, a lot of people. These weren't just employees. These were a lot of close friends. Like we all built in and done an exit years before. So we knew everybody very well. But once we got in our big investors, we took our eye off the ball because what made us successful was looking what our customer needed and going back out and running a healthy business. Whereas we now had the World Bank and Intel Capital as being our investors. I said, well, you know, there's no limit to spending. Well, of course there's a limit to spending. You know, go back to common sense that you founded the company on. So I would say that, yeah, I would. And so if I saw other companies now or other businesses now that were kind of floating away, thinking, losing touch with their original values, I would say, listen, you need to be careful. Come back to why you originally started this and keep with that, or the basic principles of you know, profitability and practicality. So I would keep them grounded.
That must happen a lot with businesses, especially, you know, in this day and age, shall we call it, with tech companies raising a lot of financing before they get off the ground and everything else. Do you think that it can take away from that kind of customer focus and trying to get the best product out there? And look, it's a similar question to what I asked you earlier with, is funding a distraction? But is it more profound than that? Is that sometimes when you have enough money in the bank that it's easier just to coast along?
Yeah, listen, as I said earlier, yeah, definitely it is a necessary distraction. But if you need the funding, but very often, and it can happen, is that the FD putting the structures in place, making sure the system's right, you can find that maybe you don't need to go for that funding that you're going to go for, that you're going to get a massive distraction on it, that we can get some maybe bank funding in there that is less of a distraction, that is, it shows that. So if you put the structures in place, get the reporting, the systems in there, that you can show this to a bank instead of to an investor, you say, well, that can be a much more a passive kind of money. That the money comes in, it gives you the necessary funding and you can go along and achieve that growth. So an FD can do that, putting in the right systems. That definitely is a good, it can give you a very good alternative to going back out to the market to get the capital.
Tell me about the plans for the future, where you see the FD Centre going, where you see your role within it going, and what you yourself want to achieve over the next 3 to 5 years.
Really, over the next 3 to 5, and I ask my clients that all the time. Me personally, very much, I want to get more FDs in, more clients in. That's it, and just to grow the business and let business owners know that this service is available, that we are there to help them grow. And it's really a message I'd love to get out there because it just enables businesses to grow much quicker. That's really what it is. And they would have a natural fear of bringing in a high caliber FD. They're saying that it's not justified. They're not that size. But when you're bringing them in on a part-time basis, it's a fraction of the cost and it's very much feasible and it pays for itself many times over.
So keeping that in mind, where can people find out more about the FD Centre, the support that you provide to business with scaling, and where can they find out more about you?
TheFDCentre.ie, that's our website. You can see our team at any stage. I'd welcome any inquiries. You can inquire on the website there. The easiest way to get us on the web.
Bart Kane, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Conor.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Conor Carney. Thanks for listening.